Welcome to Day Zero Update for February 9th, 2025. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Ganra Victorio.
And yeah, it is Super Bowl Sunday. We're doing the show a little early just to get it done ahead of the time. So, we'll be having some fun here. We got a bunch of news
this week.
We got some subscription news. We got a showcase happening in a couple of weeks because one company keeps announcing their things like 3 weeks early.
Oh, yeah.
We got some games coming out here in the near future, as well as some stuff announced for later this year. ESA's back with a new conference. Tell you about that, as well as some other industry news and such. So we'll get to that stuff here in a bit. But before we do that, we'll talk about what we've been playing. And I'll kick it off here. I've been playing a new release here called the Spirit Swap. I think the full name is Spirit Swap. Where is it at? It's Spirit Swap, I think. Lo-fi beats to match 3-2. It's a game that is a Kickstarter game. I backed and got a code for it earlier this week when it came out. From a cool little indie team that wanted to make this kind of neat looking. I would say it's like a Pokemon. What's the Pokemon Puzzle League? That style of puzzle game.
Yeah.
Where you got, essentially, you can only move blocks left and right, essentially. So you're trying to get matches of at least three or more. You're trying to hopefully get them able to get, like, combos and such for higher scores, and also to drop, garbage blocks on your opponents.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. The neat thing is that there's a story mode. It's not too terribly long, but basically you are playing this witch, a swapper. I guess technically what her role is a spirit swapper, where these blocks just kind of start showing up in the in the city, despite there being defenses that supposedly keep that from happening, as she is like going around hanging out with friends and all that kind of stuff, and dealing with their existential crises. Some that are dealing with a breakup, some that are just trying to get ready for the big there's a band, I think it's called Shag, but it's Five Hag is the name, that is, I think, happening that night. And some people are excited about it, others are trying to do other stuff. She's got a very smart friend who is trying to figure out a way to make this magic work over wireless, versus having to do it all in person kind of thing. And in each like little talking session, usually have these blocks kind of show up and cause the need for a little versus fight in this game. And that is, I have it on the medium difficulty. There's an easy difficulty if that kind of puzzle game is tough for you, as well as I think there's an even harder mode. Like, I haven't had too much trouble. There's a tough one that you play against this group of three people, and their special ability essentially lets them drop like three rows of blocks, garbage blocks on you. That makes it a little tough to kind of counter that. But whenever you get garbage blocks, all you have to do is match one of the blocks next to it. It'll break all of them that are connected. So that makes that pretty nice way to counter. But yeah, outside of that story mode, there's basic versus modes. I think it's all local multiplayer, but there's also score attack, where you're basically just playing by yourself and trying to get high scores as best you can. In the story mode, you have three spells that you can equip that are, that as you talk to your friends, you unlock one of them. That you can have. Then you have to get blocks in certain formations. There's like a basic, 2x2 square. There's like a star shape that is, I think it's like an X shape with a block in the middle. I think that's the case. I could be wrong on that, but there's one that's a diamond shape with a block in the middle. And then if you get those, you use them, and depending on the spell you have, it might delete blocks or send extra blocks to your opponent. There's one that does like one of three things. there's a random chance, that kind of thing. But it's a pretty nice game. Very good art. And it's a very queer game. The developers are full of queer people and non-white people, so there's a lot of representation of like people that have Muslim heritage and black people and all that kind of stuff. So you get some fun and some chaotic situations going on throughout when you meet up with all your buddies. So then I believe you get to like start romancing people. I haven't done that yet because that's, but I know that's there because there's achievements for it on Steam. So, but yeah, that's a fun little game. It's $20. I think there's a discount right now. I think it's 10% off.
Yeah.
For the launch on Steam, or 20% off actually. So $16 for that. Lengthwise, it's maybe not, you know, a great value unless you're just really into the puzzling itself. But
yeah,
like it's a game I was happy to support and all that. So, I assume they'll get it on consoles at some point. They mentioned that they at least have an Xbox dev kit right now, so that's probably the first one platform they'll come to. It may end up on Game Pass at that point, but we'll see. But yeah, been enjoying that a lot. So there's that. Another game that I've been playing, I got there's a charity bundle on Fanatical that has a bunch of indie games in it. Some noteworthy stuff like Thank Goodness You're Here. What else did I get out of it? Summer House. There's a Starship Troopers RTS that's in there. That Justice League Cosmic Chaos that was a Switch exclusive for a while. Little Kitty Big City, A Space for the Unbound, a bunch of other cool-looking games. And the one that kind of grabbed my attention immediately was a game called Shapes, and it's Shapes with a Z on the end. It is essentially like an automation factory kind of game, but it's based on, you know, the name you can guess. It's a much simpler design kind of system here, where, you know, when it's asking for you to deliver certain things to the main whatever home base, at first it's like, send us X amount of squares, and you build like an extractor in the area that has squares, and you send belts over to the thing, and, you know, make it pretty easy. And then it's like, oh, you need the others, you know, the other shape. I think it's circle and square, at least I have so far. And I think there's like a, it's not a star, but it's like a four-sided star kind of thing, like an X shaped star. But then you get to colors that you have to pull out. You get machines, extra machines to cut up these things. So it'll be like, oh, we need half of this circle that can cut that up into half. And it wants them arranged a certain way. So initially you're kind of just deleting the other half because it it just requires that. And then you get a machine that can flip it around. And so you kind of add that onto there and you can make use of both halves. And then you get to the coloring, which requires you to send the item through one part of this machine as well as the color, and then you get to having to mix the colors because you need, you know, magenta. It's RGB color schemes, so you get like magenta and cyan and yellow out of the mixing of the red, blue, and green basic colors. So ends up with a lot of very complicated setups, and some that are just stupidly complicated because I did not realize simpler ways of doing things. You get machines that'll let you merge belts, so you can start, you know, instead of having two belts that are sending, like, say, one item every, like, five blocks of space, you know, you can merge them together so you have at least two out of five, and you can start working on merging more and more to make super complicated setups there. But, yeah, it's kind of one of those games, and as you send in a bunch of those blocks, they have upgrades for it. That works out to upgrade like your belt of your, you know, your belt speed or how much you're able to extract or how quickly you're able to extract stuff and other things. So that becomes a reason why you kind of keep set up, you know, belts going longer than you really need for your main goal as for upgrade stuff. So yeah, it's a pretty cool little game. So that's been fun to kind of jump into for 30 minutes or an hour or whatever. So that's been one I've been playing. I've been playing more Ys Memoir of the Oath and Fel'Ghana as I got to the next big dungeon, which is like an abandoned mine, which is kind of an annoying dungeon because it's very much just constantly throwing enemies at you because it's like an abandoned mine, so nobody's been around to like call enemies. So luckily that's where I got the trophy for a 300 hit combo once I figured out sort of how generous it is on the hit combo stuff. Because I was able to essentially, once I got far enough in that, I was like running into one screen to spawn some enemies, kill them, run back to the other side, kill them, back and forth. It allows you a good like 10, 15 seconds between hits before it cancels out a combo. So that makes it a pretty easy thing. You just kind of have to actually think about it for a bit. But I managed to get to the bottom of this dungeon, not really out of trying to find it. I was kind of just wandering around not knowing what I was doing, so much just killing enemies and ending up falling down places. So I don't know if I'm actually an appropriate level for this boss, but if not, I'll just go back and start killing more enemies. But it's kind of a darker dungeon. Area, but it's kind of more, I'd say this is more of a side-scrolling dungeon in a sense, because it's a lot of this is where they introduce the double jump to that, and that helps, but then they start adding some areas where you can get across long gaps because you use the spin move that gets you like an extension on that jump kind of thing, and it's, it allows you to do some ridiculous stuff that is fun, but it can also be just chaotic because there's a lot of flying enemies and all that, and it's just where I'm at. It's all kind of chaos.
The depth perception is pretty hard in this game as far as like fighting flying enemies. But I know you mentioned that the dungeons are a little annoying because of all the enemies they throw at you. It gets worse, it's definitely annoying, but at the same time it's part of the gameplay loop. And the other cool thing about these dungeons is that every dungeon is essentially two, because they're very different from each other. You just mentioned you fell down into another one and, fought things that you think that you aren't supposed to fight. You're supposed to fight them, but you're just not ready yet, because you have to really think about, how much you want to skip over, and, that's part of the battle for me. Also, I don't know if there's a map in the version of the game you're playing, but that made it a little bit more hard for me, too.
The map is literally, an overworld map. It just shows you which way to each dungeon.
I'm talking about specific dungeon, and that made it hard as far as everything looking samey, and that was one of my issues with it.
Yeah, there's no dungeon map unless I unlock it at some point, or I just go and look up a walkthrough that would have a map, I would assume. I want to kind of go through these dungeons carefully and kind of look for all the extra stuff that's in there, because you're looking for ore and that kind of stuff so you can upgrade your weapons. But luckily on the other side, you kill enough enemies, you get enough money, you can buy the next tier of weapons a little more easily than you can to get the ore that upgrades them. I think you get a bigger boost on the next tier weapons versus what you get from the upgrades. But also, getting back to the town to do the upgrades is so much work when you're in the later parts of a dungeon. But still enjoying that. Let's see here. Also playing more some Tales of Iron 2. I managed to beat the big boss in this second area. And I've kind of been in the aftermath of that, because you kind of go back and there's other characters you find. Like I mentioned this last week, like a frog that you're helping out to take over the abandoned town because the really bad frogs killed everybody. Or drove them out, and so they kind of take over, and you have one that takes over the smith, so I could craft a bunch of weapons, and it's kind of in a Monster Hunter style where there's tiers of weapons, and it's like, okay, this is the bone axe, because you make it out of the bones you've been collecting, and then you'll eventually be able to do a second tier of that to make that. So I've been kind of making one of each, and then I found some glasses for this other character that then is selling me crafting materials, so there's specific things I haven't found very often. It's like, this makes it a lot simpler, because I have coins that I'm not spending on anything, and now I can buy some of this wood I need to make this other stuff. And solved a little bit of problem there. But yeah, then I started, there's somebody that gives out side quests, one of which was for taking out some of these spiders in this one area, and then one for taking out a big spider boss, which is a very tough boss. Imagine a big ass like tarantula spider that then the weird thing that these spiders do is they kind of, if they're a fair distance from you, they will like lift their ass up and then shoot webs at you. That if you get hit, you know, you lose a chunk of your health, and then you're kind of bound for a bit, and you have to mash a button to break out of it. This one does that same thing, but then also has another move that's similar, where it shoots out this weird butt arm at you, like this extension out of its butt to attack you. And that's a lot. Luckily, the first, it kind of runs away after you do so much damage to it. And then this managed to get to the second area where it's at, and gotten worked a bit here, but not too tough. I just need to spend a bit more time there working on it. But yeah, still been enjoying that a lot. And that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I finished God of War Ragnarok earlier this week, and yeah, that game has just an amazing sort of final sequence where Ragnarok happens, and it's chaos everywhere, and then it's just it wraps up everything nice and tight in a bow, in the best way possible. I also played the Valhalla stuff, which is essentially them trying to do a, just like with Hades, when you get to like the doors to go through, they got little symbols on top of them that sort of let you know like, oh, this is what I'm fixing to, you know, what kind of rewards I can expect at the end of it. Or it'll, you know, if I'm fixing to go into a boss. And it also does the same thing where it basically, you know, recycles sort of a bunch of the various rooms and everything to sort of, you know, kind of give it a kind of roguelite type of experience that Hades does. But it's still really good, and it kind of sort of ends that sort of whole story arc with, you know, Kratos sort of coming to terms with his past and everything. Even the occasional little cameos from the old God of War games that show up every so often. But on top of that, after I finished that, I decided to, because I'd already downloaded both of them. I think it was either last month or the month before that when both of these games were available on PSN. And it was a coffee talk, both this and episode 2. And I found myself being very much absorbed into them, so much so that I kind of lost track of time every time I was playing them. It's very,
really good.
Yeah. But yeah, it's, the game really isn't very, very complicated. All it is you're a barista, you own a coffee shop in the middle of Seattle, you got customers coming in, you make coffee for them, and then you just have conversations with them. Of course, what makes it interesting is that, you know, it takes place in an alternate universe where, you know, all myths are true, so there's elves and orcs and dwarves and, you know, aliens and mermaids and, you know, basically any type of pretty much every, you know, werewolves and vampires, they all exist, and you know, they exist all in modern America, and you know, you are essentially, you know, their problems are very relatable, because a lot of them are very, you know, very sort of related to the modern world, but it's also like through the lens of this sort of urban fantastical environment. So it's like, you know, one of them is there's these two, one of them is an elf, the other is a succubus, and they're in a relationship, but they're worried about how it's going because, you know, the elf has a, you know, his family are elves, and elves are not only long-lived, they're also very high and mighty and pretentious, and there's like some drama going on with that. There's the guy, you know, the guy who's a cop, and he's just, you know, he's arguably the most normal person in the whole group you end up getting talking with. There's the girl who's like an idol singer, and the sort of conflict she's having with her father, and stuff like that. And it's all weirdly gripping. And, you know, by the time it's over, it's like, that's it. You know, of course, it's not, that isn't actually it. There is an episode 2 afterwards where they introduce some new people, but what was weird, it was all weird, incredibly gripping. And it was, you know, and considering, you know, that, you know, it's made by game developers, there's a lot of stuff about game development in it, because two of the people you end up getting as regulars, they're both, one of them is a developer for like a major like AAA developer, and the other one is a professor at a university who specializes in computer graphics and is working like on her own sort of indie art game. And the game doesn't come out and say that these two get in a relationship, but it's pretty obvious that they get into a relationship. But yeah, it's good stuff, really good stuff. And I started episode 2 last night and sort of got through with the Banshee girl who came in the first time before all that, because there was like this heavy storm and everything and power keeps going out, all that stuff. But yeah, damn, it was good shit, really good shit.
Bothered with any of the astronaut post game secret stuff?
Yeah, I got that too with the first game.
Okay, yeah, when I beat both, I didn't deal with that, but I can imagine it'd be pretty fun too.
But yeah. And on top of that, I now have Cyberpunk 2077 on my computer now, because, you know, my computer actually is good for gaming. And I'm sort of going through trying to mod it to see, you know, because for those who don't know, CD Projekt Red, a while back, they put out a application that allows you to use mods for the game and make it easier to mod. And so I'm sort of working with that right now. And yeah, the game, it's, you know, I'm sort of going through and seeing what I can do with it, because the, you know, again, this is Cyberpunk 2077, and it's definitely in a much better state than it was when it was released, but when you're modding it, there's still, you know, still the occasional apparent issue that there might be a bug or two to run into, but that's basically what I'm doing right now. Yeah, that's basically what I've been playing. So, Danreb, I see what you've got here, so you might as well go ahead and regale us of the tales. So tell us.
Yeah, so the game that I've been playing for quite a bit and couldn't talk about was The Legend of Heroes Trails to Daybreak 2. Mm-hmm. Embargo finally lifted on Friday, so the review is already up.
Yep.
I will say, I'm not finished. I am at the finale. But I did say it takes you around, like, you know, 60 to 80 plus hours to beat the game.
And oh, yeah.
At the finale, I've beaten a bunch of Trails games before. The finale is normally going to be around 3 to 5 hours. So,
oh, yeah.
I already know that straight up. And I'm going to take my time now, because I'm playing another game that I can't talk about. We'll get there. But anyway, did you play the demo at all, Brandon?
I did. And for those of you who don't know, the demo is basically, it's not like, you know, they did with, I'm pretty sure, didn't they do this with the last one where they let you do the prologue or whatever? Yeah. Yeah, they don't do that this time. Instead, do is instead they make like a makeshift dungeon that is part of the, I guess it's supposed to be like the kind of alternate sort of
thing. Markham Garden?
Yeah, the Markham Garden, basically. And they give you the choice between like two different parties. And then you go in and then you're given like the task of like taking out a certain number of... Yes. Low tier monsters and then mid tier monsters, and then basically then the game sort of gives you examples of like how the post mission Martian Garden mechanics work, and then that's the end of the demo. So no, they don't do the prologue thing.
I do know that they released two demos. One was story based and could carry you over to the game, and then the Martian Garden didn't allow you to do that. I just don't know whether they actually went through the entire prologue or whatever it may be.
Yeah, the one I got was the Martian Garden. There might be a second demo on there. I just haven't seen it yet. I'll look at it tonight. But
Do you know about how this game allows you to split paths? Or
I know that it does it sort of similar to like what not Trails Through Daybreak was, but the previous one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does that because it brings in some of the characters that happened through that
Basically, I was just afraid that I would say too much.
I already know how it kind of works. So,
the main thing about this game is, as I mentioned, there are split paths, and like the way I got to it was rather shocking. And like, you know, just to straight up say it, someone dies, and I was like, oh, this person can't die right away. And then all of a sudden, it just like resets, and it brings you back to another day where you have to choose the other option in order to make the game continue to happen. Mm-hmm. So. Part of my issue with this, and I thought it was pretty cool because, you know, I mean, like seeing deaths happen is still pretty impactful, even though Falcom hasn't really respected death in this series, but
nope.
it's still pretty cool to see. Anyway, Brandon already talked about the Marhian Garden, and this is where this game kind of surprised me. So, you know, every second episode of a Trails arc is normally a much bigger game than the previous one.
Yep.
This one is probably, I want to say, similar in length to the first one. If you decide to not do any of the side content, you can pretty much blaze through this game in like 40, 50 hours. But, you know, if you're somebody who's invested into the series, you're not going to do that. You're going to do every side quest in the game. And yeah, there's nothing I can say that'll make anyone say otherwise. And the main thing here is, as opposed to the first Daybreak, you shouldn't start here.
No.
Play the one before it, at the very least, if you haven't played the series. just because the game takes place like a month or two after the events of the first game. You know, peace has supposedly come to Calvard, and that just isn't the case. You know, there's been a bunch of murders in Calvard lately. And then you find out one of the people behind the murders can turn into this strong this how would you put it, just this crazy monster, and basically that monster resembled the Grendel, which Van can take in the original game. So of course, you know, being a Spriggan, you can you know, accept and reject the requests as they come, but this request you can't reject, because if you reject it, like you're the murderer. If that's not going to happen,
yeah.
And of course, in typical Trails fashion, that's not the only story in the game, and the sequel was needed because the first game, you know, had a bunch of loose ends that weren't tied up yet. So,
oh yeah, that's
basically what this game does. Everyone comes back. You have Agnes, you have Aaron, you have Fairy. Everyone's cool, and they all have their own plot points as well. The main thing here is that, you know, they didn't do a whole lot to really evolve the formula. The main thing they did was allow you the option to hold triangle outside of battle, so you can use magic now, and it actually influenced you to make you want to do more of the action-based battle system, even though it's pretty much expected that you want to stun your enemies and then go in, and then open shards, which has you go into the turn-based combat. So that's still nice. Another thing is that when you have an enemy who's stunned and you use one of your when you press L to just use that notch, it allows you to do a dual attack, and you know it definitely adds some pizzazz to the battle system. Because typically, what you do to just blaze through a dungeon is get everyone's CP up to 100 or 200, and just go ahead and use your S breaks that way. And now that you have more to do, you know, it actually influences you to use your crafts, which I didn't really do in previous games. I just went ahead and used my supers, and it was easy that way. But yeah, just going back to the way the game is structured, the game kind of feels like Reverie. It kind of feels like Trails into Sky the Third. And while both of these games are full-on Trails games with full-on stories, it used like another dimension in order to bring every character in. And as cool as that was, it's kind of cheap as far as storytelling goes. But at the same time, I definitely appreciated all the side quests and all of the detail that goes into every character's story. You know, Brandon and I in the past have talked about how awesome this series handles world building. This one does even more of that. You know, you learn more about Northumbria and the things that happened in Crossbell are related to Trails into Reverie. Two characters who I'll talk about who came back, which isn't really a spoiler, is Swin and Nadia. Both of these two are back, and you know, they're as awesome as ever. They end up taking Van's place as Spriggans while he's out doing other stuff. So you'll see a lot of chapters in the game, you know, use different sets of characters, and that's a really a good way to do it, because there are a whole lot of characters in this game, and then, you know, as you go into the Marhian Garden, you'll use them all, and that was really cool. One of the issues people had with the original Daybreak was there was no minigames aside from the card game, and now they've added a whole bunch of minigames. One is fishing. Fishing is back, and they've made it fun. They added a timing mechanic to catch better fish. You know, you can use different lures and bait to get different fish, and you'll see it on the menu, so you know you aren't wasting your time. There's also a stealth mechanic, which I thought was pretty annoying. It's pretty cool at first, but basically, you know, you'll do these side quests, and you'll have to follow people around, and basically you follow them on the map, and if you get too close, you know, they'll see you. So to do that, you have to hide in these glowing sections on the map, and the stupid thing is you can hide directly in front of them in plain view, and they can't do anything about it. And if you decide to skip these minigames, you won't get as much SP, which is, you know, the reason why people do the side quests anyway, because they want to, you know, raise their Spriggan level or whatever it may be. And it just makes it feel like I wasn't having my time respected in that regard. Another thing is when you open certain chests, it goes into this other cyber dimension where you use Mare to navigate a map and open different doors using various button combinations, like a fighting game combination. And these aren't hard. They aren't easy either. Like it's really easy to look at buttons on the screen and press the wrong thing, especially if you're somebody that, you know, plays every console and the X button is never the same on any single one of them. So I've made that mistake. And yeah, you can also skip these, but the problem is when you skip it again, you lose the SP and you don't want to do that. Let's see what else here. Just to, you know, talk about the split path thing again. In most cases, like the game will force you to go back to a certain day in order to relive things. And yeah, you have to watch those cutscenes again. You have the ability to skip a short scene or skip all of them, but then you don't know what you missed, so you end up just watching them anyway, and that's a little annoying. The other thing is that normally when a split happens, it's because someone died, you know, which I mentioned earlier. And like, as I mentioned, it's super impactful, but knowing how careful, you know, some of the best bracers in the world are, like Elaine, you know, she's an A-rank bracer. She's not going to screw up. Van has this sense of smell where he always knows something is, something bad is going to happen. So like willingly having to go through all these deaths is like dumb, because it just makes me feel like it sort of disrespects the impact of that character. But yeah, so the main thing I said in my review is that it's your standard Trails game. You know, you have your good storytelling, you have your awesome characters, you have your awesome world building, and you have a whole bunch of mini games. But a whole lot of these things like feel like fluff, and as a result, it just made me feel like it wasn't as good as the rest. But at the same time, it's still great. I still recommend it. To me, it's still worth the $60. But this to me is my lowest rated Trails game. Almost every Trails game in the series on our site has over a 4.0, and I gave this a 3.5, just because like I didn't feel like it raised the bar in any sort of area. But again, it doesn't have to do that, and that's okay. If you're a fan of the series, you're gonna play this, you're gonna enjoy it. But you know, there are some things that are kind of annoying, and you wish you didn't have to go through them. But so that's pretty much it for this. I definitely still recommend it, and it comes out on Valentine's Day.
All right, awesome.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news.
Mm-hmm.
We got some news here for Game Pass. They announced the things that have been added or will be added here for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's see. Available now for Ultimate, PC Game Pass, and Game Pass Standard, Far Cry New Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
That was added earlier this week. As well as for Game Pass Standard, Another Crab's Treasure.
Yeah.
For that, so
that's a good one. It's basically a Souls-like, but it has like a very sort of cartoony British feel to it, and it's actually really good.
Yeah. But it does not go easy on you.
No, it does not.
Let's see. Also on Game Pass Standard, Ayudin Chronicle 100 Heroes. People can check that one out. Let's see. Yeah, also on Game Pass Standard, Starfield is now on there.
Mm-hmm.
You can check that one out. For Game Pass Ultimate and PC Game Pass, as well as EA Play subscribers, Madden NFL 25 is on there just in time for the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. So you can check that one out. Then let's see. This one's coming up here on the 13th for Game Pass Ultimate and Game Pass Standard. Mm. Kingdom Two Crowns. Yep. This is one that is returning to Game Pass. So that's a fun little game. Then on the 18th, which I believe is, yeah, that'll be the Tuesday after next. That's Avowed.
Mm-hmm.
for Game Pass Ultimate and PC Game Pass for Xbox and PC. So people can check that one out and see what the newest Obsidian game is, which seems very much like them building a big first-person RPG that is, like, let's say, like, if Skyrim was more action-oriented. That's a lot of the vibes I get from it. Hopefully with better writing and all that, but yeah, that looks neat for people to check out here in the next little bit. So yeah, that seems to be largely it here as far as I can see. So yeah, some neat stuff there. But yeah, they're kind of padding out a lot of this with the Game Pass Standard stuff, things that are moving from just being on Ultimate to Game Pass Standard, which isn't bad, but there's not a ton of new stuff here. I think the only new thing really other is Madden and Avowed. So that stuff you can check out here. So
yeah, Avowed is definitely one of the games I'm sort of anticipating. I hope that they did take the time to sort of work on some of the character models in that game, because some of them look kind of fugly. Not going to lie. But yeah, been hearing good things about it.
Yep. Yeah, I'm also looking forward to Avowed. And then I think another Crab Treasure was already on here, but I guess it was just on a more premium thing, or maybe it left and came back. But I know that's also definitely the case with Ayudin. My brother was playing Ayudin for a while, and then he stopped because the sub ended. So I don't know if it was because the sub ended or he didn't beat intent for it to for when it first left, but it's good to see things come.
Yeah, I think those are games that are on Ultimate. Then they're also adding them to the standard tier after X amount of time.
Okay, yeah, that's all complicated to me.
Yeah, that's the kind of situation they created at this point. So yeah, there's that. We got some other subscription news, particularly with Nintendo Switch Online Plus expansion pack. Getting a new game for the GBA, Wario Land 4. That'll be out on February 14th. So Valentine's Day, you can play not the last game in the series, but the last major one. Because, yeah, Wario Land is a weird series that started from the third game of the Super Mario Land series.
Yep.
It's just literally called... I was just looking at this. Literally called... where's this list at? There it is. Wario Land : Super Mario Land 3. It is a ridiculous name to call anything. Especially this game. But yeah, I believe you're playing as Mario, but also Wario's involved in there as well. So yeah, then they made Wario Land 2 on the Game Boy and Game Boy Color. And Wario Land 3 was also a Game Boy Color game. And then Wario Land 4... came in there right after the Game Boy Advance launch, and really highly rated, if I'm remembering correctly. It's very much like in the vein of what like Pizza Tower and some of these other indie games have been lately, kind of aping, which is a platformer where jumping is not the main thing you're doing all the time. You're doing other things like running into walls and such, depending on what the needs are. But yeah, that is a very fun, difficult kind of game, though. Just trying to figure out like where exactly you all need to go and how to accomplish things can be challenging for this kind of game. So, yeah, that's a fun one you can check out here on Friday. So yeah, there you go. Let's see here. We got some other news. We got an ID at Xbox showcase that is coming out here in the. Let's see, February 24th, which is, let's see, that's 3 Mondays from now, essentially, towards the end of the month. So I believe this is in partnership with IGN, so I assume it's going to be like one of those super long streams that in the archive is a little bit hard to find at points. But from what they mention here, it'll be starting at about 1 p.m. Eastern time, 10 a.m. Pacific time. They'll have some new stuff, some gameplay, and reveals from independent games and publishers and developers, including 11-Bit, Akupara Games, Big Fan Games, Halt Games, Critical Reflex, Curve Games, Daedalic Entertainment, Don't Nod. So they'll probably show Raging Bloom, whatever that game's called, I forget. Game Source Entertainment, No More Robots, Panic, Playstack. The next big collaboration for Bellatro, I guess, is specifically mentioned there. So,
mm-hmm.
Raccoon Logic, Raw Fury, Team 17, and the Thunder Lotus Games. We'll get a good bit of new indie stuff to look forward to, and I'm sure a good chunk of it will be on Game Pass at some point. That'll be one to check out here in a couple weeks.
Yeah, it'll be cool to say, or cool to see. My main thing is that with the Xbox showcases, it's not really a complaint, but like, you know, we have limited time, and they spend a lot of time with developer interviews and whatever it may be. So I just hope that we see if there's a game that I'm interested in, then I can go ahead and jump in a deep dive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Seeing Team 17's name, and they remind me that this wasn't really a big news story so much, but they changed their name
at some
point. They're now rebranded as Everplay Group for the overall company. But the team that's still publishing indies is still Team 17 Digital.
Yeah.
For that, it's like a weird thing to do at this point, but I'm guessing Team 17 is not as iconic of a name as I guess they would hope it'd be, but I don't know. Everplay Group is all that much better, but that's the whole thing. We got some more stuff here coming out in the near future. We got Just Crow Things is coming out to PS5 and PS4 on March 19th. I know that's a game that Dan Rip liked a lot, so people on PlayStation will finally be able to play it.
Mm-hmm.
It's been out on Xbox, Switch, and PC for about 6-7 months now.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is one of the few games on Xbox where I have all the achievements for, so I'll probably do the same thing on PlayStation because the game is that fun. For those that aren't familiar with it, it's another cozy game, much in the vein of a game like Little Kitty Big City, except you use a crow, and the cool thing that the crow can do is poop on people. And
yep.
a lot of the puzzles revolve around poop or just flying fast around the area. It's pretty cool. It has a really fun tutorial, and there's a lot of like Easter eggs alluding to other games as well. Like if you were to scroll to my review, you'll see a kid dressed like Ness who lost his baseball bat. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, so there's that. That'll be out in about a month and change. We also had a Capcom showcase. Not really much in the way of big news there, but they did announce a date for Capcom Fighting Collection 2.
Mm.
That'll be coming to PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC on May 16th. So now people can pre-order and get ready for that. That's their collection. It's just like, here's the rest of the shit we haven't put in the collection yet. So it was like Capcom versus SNK and Capcom versus SNK 2, Capcom Fighting Evolution, Street Fighter Alpha 3 Upper, Project Justice, Power Stone 1 and 2, and Plasma Sword, Nightmare of Bilstein. The Power Stone games are a good inclusion there because those are games that people like a lot that have not been in much in the way of collections. I think there's that PSP collection probably about 20 years ago at this point. Not much else since then.
Yeah, very much a sort of cult classic that kind of got shafted by the fact that it was largely, isolated on the Dreamcast. So,
yeah.
Yeah, definitely an awesome collection that I look forward to getting my hands on, especially for those aforementioned Power Stone games. That being said, as awesome and as cult-heavy as Power Stone is, that game did not age well. Neither of them did. The controls are really, really rough. So if you're someone who heard great things about it and all of a sudden you try it and you're like, what is this garbage? This is terrible. I'm like, yeah. But, you know, the cool thing about it was, you know, every kid on the playground dealt with that same jank. And, you know, that's how it eventually, like, found its ground. And, I'm pretty sure I'll be like, I don't know why I liked this, but it's still going to be fun to go ahead and try out again. I don't know what Plasma Sword is, so I'll probably try that out as well.
Yeah, that is, let's see, a 1988 3D weapon-based fighting game.
Sort of kind of like a sci-fi-esque sort of... It's like a sci-fi version of Soul Calibur, more or less.
Yeah, but it also predates it. Like, Soul Calibur was like 2000, something like
that. Yep. Well, no, Because before that, it was Soul Blade.
Yes. Okay, you're right.
And then
But
it went into the arcades. It was called Soul Edge.
Gotcha. Yeah, this is definitely one I'll be grabbing. And also, like, when it comes to collections, no one does it like Capcom in regards to like just respecting the history of everything there. They show a lot of assets. I'm sure there'll be videos talking about some of the development. It also reminds me of like one of my favorite animes on Netflix. It's called High Score Girl. It's about this kid who plays a lot of fighting games, and that also respected the history real well. The funny thing is that anime was distributed by Square Enix. So, yeah.
So yeah, there's that. Yeah, I was looking at the wiki page for that game and reviews aren't great. It's like sixes and sevens mostly.
Yeah.
But that was a lot of arcade games, arcade ports at that point.
Yep.
It's like, yeah, that's the game. There's a reason why they only charge 50 cents to play it.
Yep.
But yeah, in a collection like this, you can just keep playing it and not worry about any of that crap.
Yeah.
Because you're not paying $50 for one game. So yeah, the other parts of their announcements at the Capcom little showcase thing, they announced that they are finally doing a remaster for Onimusha 2, Samurai's Destiny.
Yep.
Still sticking to the old platforms, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. For that, that'll be out later this year. Because yeah, they're putting out a new game in a couple of years, and they need to get all the old games out.
Yeah.
So yeah, there you go for that one.
Just to be clear, there it's a remaster and not a remake, right?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, I've just never really stood for Onimusha's tank controls, and I don't think that'll change.
Yeah. This one, I believe, has a new main character from what the old one, the first game had. And then I think three goes for Jean Reno because they're like, fuck these Japanese people. We're putting a French man on the front of this game. And surprisingly, it didn't do huge either. So yeah, that's fun to see they're finally getting those out because those were definitely remasters that people were like, oh, I need the rest of these games, and then nothing happened over the last like 6, 7 years. I think that last one came out in the past, and now they're finally going to get those.
Yep.
I have no issues with all of the samurai and ninja games coming out this year. I am down.
Yeah, so there you go for that. Next one up here, Atari announced a game that is called Breakout Beyond from Choice Provisions, the Bit Trip Games people. Interesting thing is that it's not a new game. It's a game that was announced for the Intellivision Amico back in the day because they had some deal thing to do a Breakout game there that was just called Breakout. That was exclusive to the Intellivision Amico. It's like a big widescreen breakout kind of game. I assume you could also see it on the controllers that were, basically weird little phones. But now it seems like they have kept working on it and built it up into a a full game now that is being published by Atari at some point. Maybe later this year for PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC, and all that. And yeah, this is just a weird piece of history because yeah, the Intellivision Amico still has not been released, and I doubt we'll ever get a release. But they had games that started being made. And this is one that at least is going to actually be finished up after Atari acquired all the Intellivision brand and game stuff. But not the Amico. They said we don't want any of this. So good luck with that. So yeah, that's cool. That'll be out I assume later this year. So yeah, some cool breakout action. At least something coming out of the Amico looking pretty good. So there you go. Let's see here. We got yeah, ESA News. They're back. They're saying they've got a new conference coming. It's called ICON. It's with two I's, IICON, for, I think it stands for Interactive Innovation Conference, or else I'll call it as TUCON, two I's, like Roman numeral two. So, but yeah, this first one will take place next year, April 27th to the 30th in 2026 at the Fontainebleau Resort in Las Vegas, Nevada. They describe it as an invitational event to connect visionaries, thought leaders, and innovators across industries to harness the power of interactive entertainment. That sure sounds like a GDC or DICE kind of developer-focused thing. Features keynotes, discussions, and workshops, networking opportunities with executives shaping the future of entertainment, business, and technology. Promises to bring together a broad spectrum of sectors that converge with interactive entertainment, including film, television, music, sports, healthcare, education, and finance. Exhibitors that have been confirmed so far: Amazon, Disney, Electronic Arts, Epic Games, Microsoft, Nintendo, Sony, Square Enix, Take-Two, Ubisoft, and Warner Brothers Games. This is a weird little showcase, I guess, but we'll have to see if this turns into anything of note, or if it's strictly like a developer-focused thing for recruiting and sort of pushing their whatever tech stuff they got going on or whatever business stuff going on. So, yeah.
Yeah. Not so sure about recruiting, because these confirmed exhibitors are the biggest in the business and don't necessarily need to recruit, but yeah, it should be interesting to see. Obviously, it's next year, so that's a lot can happen between now and then. I've never even heard of the Fontainebleau Resort, so yeah, well, I'll have my eye on this.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's in that fun little space of time where it's like, I think DICE is in usually February or March, maybe January, depending on the year. GDC's in March, and then this will be in April. Probably not too far around like a PAX East. So
yeah,
this is a whole thing. Let's see. Yeah, I found the Fontainebleau in Vegas prices. Let's see. This is just taking me to websites. I'm not going to look at that. Then Google's going to think I want to go to Vegas, and I don't. So there you go. Yeah. Let's see, we got some more news, more game news here.
Mm-hmm.
Sony shut off more MLB The Show 25 with a new trailer. You know, some of the gameplay stuff that they are talking about, some of the big changes they're doing. There's also one that, if you look up Nintendo's YouTube, they show a trailer just for the Nintendo Switch version, which looks rough in 2025. But it's fine for the most part. They have a Road to the Show, which is their career mode, where they'll start by playing 2 to 3 games in high school, 3 to 4 college games in the amateur. And based on the trailer that they show, there's actual college teams in there. So this seems very much like the way that I think was it NCAA football would start, where you'd play almost like a tournament of sorts in high school before you got. You decide like how good your recruit was in before you got to the next area and next team and all that. So that seems like that. They're saying they have a revamped attribute progression system for control of your player's development, including crafting perks to your liking. So that's interesting, because the way you would play now is you would get equipment that you would equip that would bump up your stats, and then as you do more things, whether you're just a pitcher or a fielder or batter or whatever, how well you did with all your stuff would improve those specific attributes that are tied to those, pitches and types of hits you're getting and all that. So this seems like maybe you'll get points. That's what they used to do, that you just get skill points you would put in your various stats. Let's see. That's mostly what's their franchise. They have more, say choices matter, consequences are real, and time is precious, as a revitalized free agency system adds risk-reward elements, strategy, and excitement to the pursuit of the top free agents each offseason, and then you look to the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
Every big signing, so there you go. Let's see, for Diamond Dynasty, yeah, they got rid of sets and seasons that are not returning in MLB The Show. Diamond Dynasty and MLB The Show 25 offers 2 new places to play: Diamond Quest, which is a risk and reward board game like mode. That seemed neat from what I saw, the little bit of it in the trailer. There's a highly competitive multiplayer mode in Weekend Classic featuring some of the best rewards. I think that just has various, changes of like what I assume like setting and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. We'll see how that goes. Speaking of rewards, fans can earn top rewards in their favorite modes at various points in the year. New team affinity programs will be the go-to place for fans to unlock items. Players unique to their favorite MLB team, which, yeah, that was always kind of a battle pass of sorts, but you never had to pay for it. I feel like that's the thing that Diamond Dynasty did that none of the others do, is like all the battle pass stuff is free. Just a matter of putting in time during the quote-unquote season to unlock everything, whereas I'm mm-hmm. pretty sure like Madden, college football, and all that require you to pay up for the specific battle pass stuff, but I could be wrong on that. But yeah, they got gameplay improvements. They got a new thing they're calling Show Tech. Yeah, I think it's just new animation system and all that, so hopefully that works well. Alright, so yeah, there's that, and yeah, then I guess the last thing here. More storylines for the Negro Leagues. Season 3, as they're calling it. Some famous and some forgotten legends. Narration footage from Bob Kendrick, the president of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, so that'll be great. And yeah, that looks like it's going to be a cool year for MLB The Show 25. So their schedule of streams and such, there's so deep dives on it. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, let's get to our next bit of news here. EA announced some stuff. They announced the next Battlefield is happening, and they kind of announced it in an interesting way. They showed off some early footage of the game, as well as that they are doing an early preview system that's called Battlefield Labs. That will essentially allow people to kind of get in and play it and give feedback and all that until they're confident in what they're doing here. It seems like a lot of what they've been doing with Skate for that. So that's an interesting way to go, especially because it's done very well. And this thing where they're calling this group of studios Battlefield Studios, with DICE working alongside Criterion, Ripple Effect, and Motive to create a full game that'll have a campaign and multiplayer and all that. So yeah, that's game's looking like a return to form for like what Battlefield 3 and 4 were, to a sense. So that'll be interesting to see how this turns out, because yeah, this is a franchise that is important for EA, but has not really. They definitely need this to do well. So yeah, there you go. For that, let me see what else we got here. More EA news.
Yeah,
this time around, Dragon Age: The Veilguard. With the quote that Andrew Wilson put out that went around the industry is clowned on. Because yeah, he was speaking during their earnings call about the underperformance of Dragon Age: The Veilguard, which has, I guess, sold maybe about 1.5 million copies out there, about half of what EA was projecting and expecting, but considering how the development has been, because I think it was developed initially as like for a good bit there, and before they said like, you know what, fuck it, we'll redo this and make it like a classic game in the franchise. Mm-hmm. Andrew Wilson's quotes here, talking about it, in order to break beyond the core audience, games need to directly connect to the evolving demands of players who increasingly seek shared world features and deeper engagement alongside high-quality narratives in this beloved category. Dragon Age had a high-quality launch and was well-reviewed by critics and those who played. Mm. However, it did not resonate with a broad enough audience in this highly competitive market. Just like describing as like players want shared world features and deeper engagement alongside mm-hmm. high-quality narratives in ways like, one, this is nonsense, what he's saying. Mm-hmm. Basically, we want, Fortnite's level of success, so it has to be, shared deeper engagement.
Yeah.
In a way, it's like, well, in a way, suggesting like maybe we should have gone for a. I don't know that would have been a good idea either, because obviously, BioWare has tried live service stuff with. I forget what the game is called. Anthem. Yeah, that's right. That's,
yeah.
They tried to go big on that and kind of fell flat on their face because it's just not what they've been good at.
No. It wasn't. I liked Anthem a lot, but once the main campaign was wrapped up, it was basically, that was it.
Yeah. They worked on some post-launch content, but not very much of it.
No, they were going to do like a 2.0, and they ended up scrapping that.
Yeah, just like scrapped and be like, we'll just recoup for our next thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think was Mass Effect.
Yeah, Andromeda. And for the record, I liked Mass Effect Andromeda as well, but it was a game that was made by their B team, and it shows. They did update it, and it's now very good. They improved it over time, and it's now very much a very good game. And I would say it's on par with your average Mass Effect game, but that first release was very much they very much fumbled it, let's put it that way, and kind of hurt its image when it came out.
They've been kind of chasing the success of like Dragon Age Inquisition
Yeah.
that did very well in the wake of the new console launches, but sort of it was a weird launch just overall because of things like it had multiplayer to it that wasn't half bad, but
No, playing Veilguard, which I did like Veilguard quite a bit, but it is definitely a game, if you play it for a long amount of time, you can tell that this is something that was worked on and then scrapped and then worked on again and then scrapped again over and over and over until they finally got what you had in the end. Like, it has a lack of focus to it.
And it's one of those games that especially like Inquisition was in a
Yeah.
sense, because it's very much the thing that everybody's like, stop doing side quests in that first area, just get past that, and then it gets killing your momentum, then you're gonna get better after that, but doing side quests all the time.
Yeah. Also, I will just tell you, Veilguard, the very beginning of it sucks. It does. It's bland. It doesn't do a good job of like telling you why you're doing what you're doing. It just sort of plops you in the middle of it. It's like, oh, you're apparently, like it gives you like a sort of like a choice for like a backstory like the Inquisition does, but Inquisition frankly just does it better. And it has it seem a lot more effective all around, but but it just says, oh, this is a, you're this person, Varric thinks you're awesome, so you got to do this, and that's about it.
I mean, last week we spoke at length about Dragon Age being, a failure as far as like sales go. You know, the goal was for it to reach 3 million, and I'd say that was possible, especially with the fact that the game pretty much released on everything except Switch. And it should have translated better, but in addition to what Brandon said about the constant iterations, and I don't even think that's fully to blame. Like, we also have to consider the fact that all of the great games last year were RPGs, so it was crowded. You're not going to be better than Baldur's Gate, so it's like I'm not saying why try, but you have to understand like what kind of environment you're releasing in. And it just came out at a time where we had Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, we had Metaphor V Fantasio, we had you name it. If every major IP had a game that came out, and it was very middle and end heavy as far as like the way the year went. So I obviously feel for BioWare. They're cutting some staff and moving on to Mass Effect, which we're all scared for. We already mentioned that. But yeah, just to get back to the story in general, he doesn't actually say like you need live service. Like I'm sure there was definitely sort of an assumption there, especially with the shared world statement. But I think that's more related to something like Elden Ring, which Elden Ring is not known for being a multiplayer game, but they do have you die and things like that. So I'm thinking like those were the things that he kind of wanted to Kotaku put it one way. That being said, like this was all stuff that's said at an earnings call. Not your typical person isn't gonna just listen to it just because. Like there are reasons to be on that call. Me as an EA stockholder, a former employee, like I want to see the stock go up, but it went down 17%. So I'm not gonna sell right now. I'm gonna wait till it goes back up. And you want to be able to appeal to the people who are buying the stock, and at the same time, it's like, think about the stock market in general. Do you think everybody investing in EA knows about like what they're doing and the environment behind it? Like you would hope so, but at the same time, it's like when you're talking about shareholders and things like open world games, because not open world games, but live service games, because they make so much money because of Fortnite and all that stuff. Like, when we're talking about that specific kind of game, these are games where you want to appeal to an audience who only has time to play that game. So when you release something else, you want to find a way to steal that time. And Dragon Age is not going to do that. I don't know why anybody thought it would, but at the same time, that's sort of why EA split into EA Games and EA Sports, so like or rather EA Entertainment, so they can like focus their studios onto doing the things that make sense to the business. But at the same time, it's like, why did this even happen? Sort of made the company worse in a way. But yeah, like yeah, but not everybody at an earnings call is going to really know what Andrew was talking about or inferring, and that's more for the gamers to go ahead and take place. But normally, a few days after an earnings call, is there a town hall meeting with all of EA staff, and that includes like people who are like underlings and whatever it may be. So it'll be more interesting to see what he says there. Those are never recorded, and normally an NDA is involved, but people always leave.
Yeah.
Because if he said this to his employees, I'm pretty sure people would go.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they would know that he's just saying buzzwords.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But I do think it's important to at least look at what he's saying here, because he's saying, like, yeah, this probably wasn't the right game, what this team should have been working on. And it's like, yeah, they probably should have made this game, like, but they were just starting that because they were getting out of Mass Effect and Anthem and trying to figure out, like, what they're going to do next. That was probably just Dragon Age having been hemorrhaging people constantly, especially though they're big names and
Yeah.
such, their place of trying to figure out like what's next.
You say 4 years ago, and 4 years ago, everyone was over hiring, and yeah, like we're seeing all of the bad stuff that affected now, rather than it's rough in that regard.
Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of a game that just took a long time to get to where it was, and
Yeah.
kind of dealt with the outcome of that, which is that you kind of miss probably your best window for, probably should have been out before, and Baldur's Gate 3 and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Because those are games that are more evergreen, but I think Dragon Age will sell so well as it gets more discounted here. I think when they're first talking about the like restructuring and such, he had a deal of the week thing on PSN for 45% off.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's getting there. So yeah, that's a fun a bit of behind the scenes stuff there. So now we get to take two and what they've been saying during their earnings call, which is that they're pretty confident that surprise, and
No.
the way Strauss Zelnick puts this is like, look, there's always a risk of slippage, and I think as soon as you say words like absolutely you jinx thing, we feel really good about it. Here, look, I think the game is eagerly anticipated, but both internally and externally, we know that Rockstar seeks perfection and never claims success before it occurs. I'm fond of saying arrogance is the enemy of continued success, so we're all running scared, and we know that the competition is not asleep. Super exciting. Yeah, we're gonna potentially put out another G5, just reached 210 million copies sold. Like, oh, if we can get that over the next 10 years, hell, if we can get that in like 8 years or 7 years, that'd be fantastic. Whatever it takes to do that again, be a thing. And yeah, that's basically what he's saying. It's like, we hope so. We'd sure like to make a ton of money whenever that's ready to go.
Yep.
Yeah, this was a whole lot of nothing. That being said, like there are a lot of good things to look forward to in regards to Take-Two. We there's Civ 7, Mafia, Borderlands 4, they're all in that story. But all it takes is just for one person to ask where GTA is to just trap someone. And it's like he's not really lying. Like at the end of the day, he is. Like there's absolutely no way this game comes out next year. But as soon as he says that, the stock price drops. So yeah, you gotta be careful.
People are buying their stock now to hopefully see some return by this fall. Go for that. I think that's it for the. We do have a new Steam feature from Valve that adds a little like warning prompt when you're looking at early access games, if you've done that. That is like, here's an early access game with a bunch of boilerplate. Let's the dev answer a few questions on early access and how through it and all that. And it'll say like, hey, just to let you know, the last update from the developer was 4 years ago, so this information below may not be accurate for that. So, which is a smart move. Lets people know that if there's somehow the sort of person doesn't keep scrolling down and seeing like when the last like news post was from them or anything, or this hasn't been done by. Yeah, this a neat improvement. So yeah, useful for people looking to buy Earth Shape as they're going through development. And other times they're kind of like Hades 2, where it's like this is kind of mostly there.
Yeah.
They're just looking for feedback on decisions they've made, and seeing
yeah,
they'll just keep adding things as they finish it. Some good news for people.
Oh yeah,
all right. Good news. Nintendo thinks they have good news.
Mm-hmm.
Is that they think they know how to avoid scalpers. Reiterating the plan they talked about a couple years ago, basically saying like, we plan to produce enough.
I think the
translated quote here is, we will take all possible measures based on experience we have accumulated to date regarding scalpers in preparation. Yeah, we are planning to try to just make enough units to avoid having, you know, major stocking. Serving up a lot.
Yeah, I'll believe it when I see.
They've been delaying the launch long enough that I'm dismissive of that at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume that they are taking this extra time because they are trying to pump out as
yeah.
Good to see.
It's cool that, you know, they care. And first of all, though, companies don't care.
No, but, they don't.
But, you know, if you want to dig a little bit deep, Nintendo does care to an extent where, sure, they're absolutely going to sell everything off of the assembly line. But when that's bought by scalpers entirely, they're not buying the games. And it's the games that actually, if Nintendo sees that they're selling all these Switches, but they're not selling any games, then yeah, they know there's a problem. And the problem is, they can't really do anything to solve that, no matter how much they make. The problem here lies with the retailers. And the problem with that is that, more than Nintendo, the retailers don't care. As long as the units are off of their assembly, it doesn't matter. And the rough thing here is, like, you know, let's look at a company like that. There isn't a whole lot of physical games or media there anymore. They've really lowered their stock there. Like, everyone's buying digital nowadays, and if you go into a Best Buy, like, you're probably gonna whatever it may be. So I'm sure these are things that Nintendo, you know, wants to relay to the retailers, but until the retailers find a way to combat this, only allowing people to buy one at a time, or, you know, putting in different kinds of ways on their online infrastructure to prevent scalpers. And, you know, I've used Best Buy as an example. They've actually been doing a good job, especially if you're a Best Buy Total whatever member. I'm one of them, because they had that deal with the buy two, get one free Switch games. But yeah, until we see the retailers really try to make an effort to stop this from happening, it's tough to really believe what I'm going to see here. But I will say, you know, I'm going to go ahead and be positive about this. Like, if you really want a Switch and you're online, you probably should be able to get one. It'll be hard the first 2 weeks, but we'll see down the line. The other thing that could be a problem is obviously with the tariffs that Trump wants to impose. And I don't know how that'll affect pricing, but it's we're in a weird space where the United States hasn't seen prices for consoles, but we've seen them just about everywhere. It'll be interesting to see how that ends up happening.
Yeah, I imagine the big thing for Nintendo is just trying to have more stock. Like, also time between availability for things, like they had for the Wii and the Switch and all that. Didn't have that for the Wii U. There's nobody wrong.
Sadly.
That was one of those fun times where stalkers bought up a lot of stuff and
yeah,
ended up having to return a lot of it.
Yeah.
They made anything. Like, yeah, that was fun. But yeah, this other stuff, not so much of pre-ordering ahead of time, but yeah, I don't know if Nintendo's going to try and make their storefront a big part of this, as Sony has done with PlayStation Direct. The website would be all that good at it. Yeah, it's always weird to realize, like, oh yeah, they're selling games. I don't know, don't put any discounts as you can at any other place, Walmart or Target or Best Buy or Amazon. That'll be a fun time there, announcing dates and prices and all that. We'll end up last here with one bit of bummer news. Yeah. Iron Galaxy has laid off 66 developers at their studios as a what they call a last resort of the studio. Yeah, they put up on their website saying this was a means of last resort for us, a measure we do not take lightly. Iron Galaxy has been one of those studios that has done everything they can to keep their people on staff when they're between projects and try to get more work for people so they don't have to lay anybody off. And it seems like they are at a huge surprise because there's tons of port houses now out there and support studios and such to work on things. And we're between Switches, basically. So I imagine they've done some work on that. Games to the Switch, so Switch 2 kind of still being a ways off is probably dead. I believe they've worked on like the Last of Us ports to PC and some. But yeah, we thank our former teammates for working with us. We'll be doing everything we can to support them in the search for the next phase of their careers. We are sorry to see much people in the market for new employees are very much excited in a more boast way of like, these are quality. That's, you know, probably some of the best people we could consider for our positions, so have a better shot at getting new work for studios, though. Which team? I think they have one in Florida, one in Chicago, so remote work is available. They may have to move or not if they're in Chicago, because there's not a ton of big developers there. It's largely like NetherRealm at this point. I think the Jackbox, the Octodad developer, they're also in Chicago. Hilarious that that small team now is steady developers in Chicago. And got shut down unexpectedly. Yeah, it's sad to see, especially for a studio. Does a lot of support work for other developers and publishers to have be in this kind of place. Must show kind of where things are at this. So if they're late, probably not a great sign for the...
Yeah.
But that is, I think, going to be the way that we end this show. So,
yep.
Yeah, thank you, and Brandon and Dana, for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and stories to talk about. What do we have for Civilization VII's out this week? Mm-hmm. So that's a thing, Urban Myth Dissolution Center. Afterlife EP and Assassin's Creed Shadows got delayed. Date Everything got delayed. Or no, Afterlife EP is actually on Legend of Heroes Trails Through Daybreak and Tomb Raider 4 through 6 Remastered. I'm just morbidly curious to see what the hell they did for Angel of Dark. That was kind of an unfinished game.
Yeah.
If they went and did any above and beyond work to like polish it up and put in content that maybe got cut, that's a harder sell than the first three games.
Yep.
But yeah, there's some interesting stuff coming out this week. Civ 7 will be the big one that people have been paying extra money for early access and been like, it's okay. Which also means they're going to put hundreds of hours into it, but
yep,
it just means in comparison to 4, 5, and 6,
yeah,
which are games you could easily put 1,000 hours in.
Mm-hmm.
One of those franchises where you can be like, it's okay. And it means it actually just depends on how much you care about the differences and such between the games and what they buy or expand on systems that were in the previous games. So I think it's going to end up doing it for us this week. If you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know, they should check it out. Yep. And select strangers that are also excited about some games. So thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.
See ya.